Okay, I'll call the meeting of Stan Sarah, April 22nd, 2014, to order. Roll call, please.
Gordon Ford.
Here.
Donna Riley.
Here.
Maria DeAnda.
Here.
Mike Lynch. Darren Garrett.
Here.
Jeff Grober.
Here.
Jason Gordo.
Here.
Michael O'Neill.
Here.
Jim DeMartini.
Here.
Joan Clendenin. We have a quorum.
Thank you. Announcements?
Okay, I have one. Just an update on the bank transition. As the cutoff is May 1st is our cutover date. That's only 9 days away. Since January, staff has been processing documents preparing for this transition. Northern Trust has a team of about 12 to 15 people involved. The Bank of New York has 5 or 6. A big part of that is just in case somebody's not available, there's somebody else to pick up the ball so nothing gets dropped. There's been weekly meetings between Stan Sarah and Northern Trust since January, and Northern Trust and the Bank of New York team are also meeting weekly. All the accounts have been set up and verified. Both banks have set up the timelines and mapped all of the accounts so they're ready for the transition. I've checked in with both banks recently, and they're both ready to go and say the other one's pretty easy to work with. On the domestic side, all of our managers have been formally notified, and Northern Trust has also continued to notify them and send information out to them, so they all have their account information and instructions for what they need to do. For the most part, it's business as usual up until cutoff, and then they just pretty much switch to another bank. Fortunately, all of our managers have current relationships with Northern Trust, so Northern Trust isn't new to anybody. So that's really helpful. As for on the international side, as I mentioned earlier, all the markets had to be reopened. And with new applications and powers of attorney, some of them require tax forms and other items. Everything had to be processed, approved, reviewed and approved, and then finalized and signed, and then the originals had to be sent. They won't open any of the markets until they have the original documentation. I have to do kudos to Mary Williams in our office. She did an excellent job of processing all of this paperwork, keeping track of it, the different revisions going back and forth, and we got them all turned around quickly. In fact, Northern Trust has tried to hire her a couple times to train their other clients. Believe it or not, for some reason, clients tend to not turn this documentation around, which slows up their process, and it makes it difficult for them to be ready. As of today, Israel, Turkey, and Japan are open, and they expect the rest will be done by Friday. The SEC lending program is unwinding as scheduled, and all the contracts will be closed by April 30th. I've also met to determine performance reporting needs and are in the process of scheduling on-site meetings. Probably in August they will be here for that. We've had our first training on the electronic cash movement and reporting system. Now, with Northern Trust, everything will be electronic. No more memos to be typed and signed and faxed. We'll be doing everything electronically. The GASB regulations have also been discussed, and Northern Trust is ready to go with that. And so we're going to be having accounting meetings. Also, all the accountants can talk to each other and make sure we know what we have to do. On April 30th, we will run a report showing all of our holdings as well as our unaudited month-end reports out of the Bank of New York. We're just going to run them, save them off, just because then we've got them. And then we will actually get our regular audited monthly reports from the Bank of New York's 10 days into May. So we'll be ready to go ahead and reconcile that. We won't actually see any reports from Northern Trust till June 30th, which is very typical, quite normal from everybody I've talked to, and that'll be for the May closing, and then we'll get the June 30th closing 10 days later in July. So if all goes well, everything will look good. There's always that hope. Northern Trust is also scheduling time to be out here during that period to make sure that Natalie and the accountant and that we need everything we need, we have. We don't have much time to turn around those documents because it's on the heels of our year-end close, and our auditors will be here by the end of August. So we have to be ready to close our books. So it's all moving forward. We've pumped out a lot of information. Lots come back to us. We've done a lot of work, a lot more to do, but it's moving smoothly. So keep your fingers crossed. T-minus 9 days is cut over. It's doesn't feel as scary as it is right now. It seems like it's moving forward, and I have to give a lot of kudos to their project manager. Is very organized, knows what he's doing. So it's taken a lot of heat off of us. But honestly, say when we first started this, it's like, I've never done a bank transition. I'm not quite sure I know how. So I was really glad they knew how, and we just needed to follow along and do what we needed to do. So it's moving forward, and I'm expecting good results at this point.
Good. Thank you, Kathy. And I want to say that Kathy's done a remarkable job managing this process. She really has. She's made it easy on a lot of the staff. Her project management skills have really shown through this. And, you've done a good job.
Thank you.
Any other announcements?
I do. I have one. Just wanted to let you know that we found out Monday that we weren't going to have a quorum for the Internal Governance Committee meeting, so item 8A has been postponed until next month.
All right. Any other announcements? Under public comment, matters under jurisdiction of the board may be addressed by the general public before or during the regular agenda. However, California law prohibits the board from taking action on any matter which is not posted on the agenda unless it's determined emergency by the board retirement. Any member of the public wishing to address the board during public comment period shall be permitted to be heard once up to 3 minutes. Please complete a public comment form and give it to the chair of the board. Any person wishing to make a presentation to the board must submit the presentation in written form with copies furnished to the board members. Presentations are limited to 3 minutes. Any public comment? Okay. Consent items.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion for approval. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay. Anybody opposed? No. Moving on to item 6. Annual update, direct lending, White Oak.
We have our first annual update from White Oak. Andre's here, and we'll go over our investment, and we'll also address a investment in Selling Source LLC.
I believe in addition to the information supplied here, we have a handout or one page from staff. Has White Oak had a chance to see that?
Yes.
Okay. This will be your first, I guess, attendance here. So
great. Well, thanks for having us, and we're excited to be here. And you know, this meeting is supposed to give you guys just a general update on the portfolio, the opportunity set in which you're invested with us that we're pursuing. And also, we're here to answer all of your questions and get you hopefully comfortable with the portfolio and the in particular the investment in Selling Source. I know we sent the presentation materials beforehand. We can just follow through the pages. I'm looking at page 4. Just as a reminder for everyone, what our investment strategy is. White Oak is in the business of originating senior secured loans for the benefit of smaller and the middle market and middle market companies, primarily United States. We think like a bank, but we are a little bit more flexible than the banking system that the wheels are coming off in some ways these days. So we're a substitute to the what traditionally should be companies that could get bank financing, but for whatever reason they're not. Our loans are senior secured, top of the capital structure, meaning they're first lien. They're the safest part of any company's capital structure. Our loans are positioned to be shorter duration. We'd like to say they're long-term bridge loans. We're helping companies achieve a milestone, so it's not permanent capital or long-term capital for, as a source of financing for the companies we invest with. In terms of value, preservation, and underwriting, we tend to underwrite to companies that have collateral, and we underwrite to 50% loan to value. And the times that we underwrite to companies that have less collateral, we try to make sure the turn of leverage is more conservative, so maybe 3 turns of leverage. What that means is if the company's profits are $10 million, we'd like to give them up to about $30 million of a loan. So the high yield market today is about 5.5-6 turns of leverage. So you can argue that we're 50% more conservative than the high yield market. The companies we're targeting have an enterprise value between $50 million and $1 billion, and that's our sweet spot. And in terms of what our job is to find these deals, which is not, there's no market for them, so we have to find them. It's not easy. The second thing we do is do the credit underwriting, make sure that we do our credit work. And we structure the deal so that it's attractive to us and our limited partners. And our goal is to price risk accordingly, so we don't leave money on the table, and also to make sure we get paid for risk and get paid for illiquidity, because we've locked your capital for a period of time. If you were going to be happy with 5% returns, you would not be investing with us. You'd go to the public markets. So in addition to kind of the lockup, or the trade-off for the lockup is for us to provide you with yields that are higher than the public markets. Are there any questions on kind of the refresher of what our strategy is and what our focus is? Okay. If you go to the next slide, we're just trying to provide a portfolio update. This is very customary for us when we sit up with our clients annually or quarterly. We provide these statistics. The first real stat is a chart with a pie chart under it. It's called sector exposure. So we have 19 loans in the book today. Our target is to get to 25 to 30 positions when it's all said and done. So we're continuing to originate loans. The average position size is about 3.7 million. And our projected IRR for these loans is about 15% gross, with a current cash yield about 10.9%.
When's the end of the investment period, Andre?
It's a 2-year investment period, so we have 2 years as of January 1st of this year.
Okay.
So we did our fundraising, the total raise ended up being $560 million. We had one client that came in as a separate account last minute, so we're co-investing directly with this fund. So what you have is a portfolio of all first lien loans with an average duration of about 3.3 years. We're diversified by sector with an average loan to value that's below the 50% mark, which we target. So the lower the loan to value, the more conservative the portfolio is. So we're approximately at 40%. 3 of our loans have been repaid. 2 of them were candidly home runs. We can talk about that if you like, but I'll give you an example of one loan that we made this time last year, which you had exposure to in your portfolio. We lent money to a coal company. The coal company was using our money. It was a $55 million total loan to purchase another coal company, and then 5 months later or 4 months later, Morgan Stanley did a high yield offering. So what does that mean for us or the fund? We put $55 million back in kind of the late spring of last year, and 6 months later, we got $74 million back, $74 million back. So it was a very nice return for us. So that's one of the 3 loans that got repaid. And sometimes we can't promise that. That's a very nice IRR. It's about 100% IRR. But sometimes we get lucky and get repaid early.
Did you churn that money right back in then?
Yes, into new loans, yes. We have one recycle right within our mandates.
Do you have a prepayment penalty or something? How could you loan $55 million to get $70 million?
Very good question.
trying to figure out how to do that myself.
No, it's a fair, we have a couple of, I want to call it tricks under our sleeves, but we have yield maintenances. For example, we can use 1 or 2 years of yield maintenance, because our argument to the borrower is, I mean, our underwriting, and our friends at SIS have seen this, I mean, our deal binders are very thick. So our argument is, guys, if we're going to do all this work, we don't want you to prepay us early. You know, we want to be around for 2 or 3 years. So the tricks that we have under our sleeves is, one, prepayment premiums. So if you pay early, we get 3%, 4% loaded on top of that loan balance, and we get that. The second thing is yield maintenance, and that's very effective. You can have a 1 year yield maintenance or 2 years. So, for example, if you get repaid in 6 months, you get 2 years worth of interest for a 2 year yield maintenance. So, there's things that we have that we bake in into our structures to protect ourselves for getting paid early. We want to get paid for that work that we did. If you go to do you have any questions on this page? Any more questions on this page before we move on? Okay. The next page is what we call our quantitative kind of analysis. This gives you a real good snapshot of what the portfolio looks like from the amount of the loan size. Please keep in mind that just because we lent money, for example, to Hudson at $38 million, that obviously, if you add all these numbers up, it's a lot bigger than the fund that you're invested in. So we have other capital pools of capital available to us that you invest pro rata with our other buckets. But this gives you a real good snapshot of the loans that are in the book today, the loans that got repaid. So the one that I mentioned earlier was called Canary. It's in the bottom where we put $54 million into the deal, and that's already been repaid. So, you know, you'll see how we charge for interest, the cash coupon, the OID or PIK, and the transaction fee, which goes to our investors, and the projected IRR. So the portfolio currently is projecting about a 15% cash IRR, total IRR with a cash component of close to 11%.
Pardon me, can I ask a quick question?
Of course.
I don't understand your call protection, what the 3-2-1.
Very good question. So 3-2, so let's say we have a 4-year loan. Mm-hmm. If we get prepaid in year one, it's 3% penalty.
That's what I thought, but
I wasn't. Yeah, no. Okay. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
Sometimes when you're in the business and you kind of are, you speak the same lingo, you expect everybody to understand it.
That's
so
okay.
Our apologies.
I just wanted to make sure that I understood.
Yeah, and then you'll see the make holes, et cetera, on some of these loans. And again, we're haggling on our collective behalf for everything we possibly can get, right? Sometimes we want, the perfect deal is you get, you know, non-call for the loan, or, you know, 5% prepay in year one. You're not going to get that. That's not market. So we do the best we can to get the most, but sometimes we lose some of those battles. If you go to the next page, you'll see the qualitative kind of analysis that we do. So you'll get a sense of what the use of proceeds of our capital or financing was for. So there's one checked under, for example, M&A, growth capital or refinancing, and or sometimes we have a new venture, and you'll see what the collateral looks like. So a lot of boxes under PP&E, which stands for property, plant, and equipment, which you get to the loan to value of under 50%, which we're close to 40% at. And then you got regulatory exposure. So you get a sense of how we're viewing the risk when you think about these credits. Going to the next slide, page 9. This is kind of the balance sheet information. So you'll see that you know what the revenue trajectory looks like or EBITDA. Sometimes they, you know, just because if there's a negative EBITDA, we picked a loan to go over with you guys that had the biggest negative EBITDA, and we're going to tell you why we felt comfortable. You know, if you look at this on paper, say, you know, Andre, have you lost your mind? Why would you lend money to a company that has negative $24 million of burn? For one of our borrowers is called Magellan. And so we picked Magellan today to go over that loan. So you'll get a sense of why we felt comfortable with the risk and the underwriting. So we'll go over that with you today. Which is the next slide. Hint. Sorry, go ahead.
I have one more question.
Yeah, of course.
Sorry. On page 8,
yes.
You list closed investments and investments repaid in full. And then you refer to, on this page 9 as well, closed investments. How is closed different than repaid in full? Is it just an early out?
Yes.
They've been,
it's the same. It's the same. They've been repaid. So for us, investments repaid in full. So where's the closed investments?
Closed at the top.
Oh, closed.
The transaction closed in the sense that it's funded.
It's funded. It's in your portfolio.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. And repaid in full is it was closed at one point, but then it's already been repaid.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Closed just means it's funded.
Let's talk about hand. Do you have any questions on the balance sheet information page? If not, I'll give you an example of one of our loans in our portfolio. We did this in the Q4 of 2013. It's a publicly traded company. It's called Hanson Medical. They're based in Mountain View. God forbid any of you guys have ever had angioplasty or you had a stent in your heart. My father did, so I've been through that experience with him. The way, if you have a heart attack and if you need to have a balloon to go to your heart and put a stent in it, the way it works for almost everyone is they go through your groin area. This is your doctor, your surgeon, puts a metal piece of, looks like a straw, and they go through their groin using a sonogram as the map, and they take a right turn, a left turn, and then 3 hours later, they deliver this kind of tube to exactly where the blockage is. Then once that's delivered, they stick another kind of tube through it, and that's where the balloon is. They balloon it up, and then they put the stents. So it's about a 6-hour procedure. And it's a lot of doctors take years to perfect the hand technique because it's a lot of right turns and left turns. And you do get oops, I hit something I shouldn't hit, or I came close to making a right turn and didn't really go all the way right and I punctured something. Physicians don't really talk to you about that because you just kind of, that's your recovery period. So this company uses robotics technology to deliver the first tube I mentioned, instead of going through a hand technique, it still uses sonogram, but it used robotics to deliver that metal piece all the way to your heart to deliver the balloon machine and the stent machine. So that takes about, it cuts your surgery time almost in half. And you don't need to rely on your perfected hand technique to get the delivery of that device up to your heart. So it's one could argue that it's a no-brainer. Anyone that wants to have heart surgery, you would want your physician to be using this technology. Well, it's a new technology. It's already approved. This company is publicly traded, is in NASDAQ. Its market cap is about $230 million of enterprise value. So there is some value to the company, and they had a loan via Silicon Valley Bank originally. It was a 5-year loan. The two first years of the loan there was no amortization, meaning no principal repayment back to the bank. But after year two, it was going to be very heavy amortization. So they're going to start giving principal back. And this company, the way where it is in its life cycle is the technology has been approved. They are delivering this device to hospitals. However, it's a slow adoption rate. Why? Mm-hmm. Because anytime you introduce something new to hospitals, and hospitals are not really cash rich today, it takes time for them to adopt new ideas. The other battle this company is facing is a lot of the physicians that have perfected this hand technique are slow adopters of technology. They say, hey, it took me 20 years to get this right. However, the new physicians coming up to market will be adopting to this technology a lot faster. So the sales cycle is long, and that's why this company is burning through cash. However, when we were about to fund the company raised $80 million of new cash, and we lent them $33 million to take out Silicon Valley Bank, and we put a less aggressive amortization schedule in our loan. We actually put a cash flow sweep instead of fixed amort. And we're charging a publicly traded company approximately 14% interest. So 11% cash interest, 3% PIK, so all in, it's 14% interest. And the way we're thinking about the risk was We got a third-party group that is specialized in valuing the intellectual property that's FDA-approved for these kinds of businesses. And the valuation came at $40 million, which is inside of our $33 million. However, on top of that, we required the company to have a minimum cash covenant of $15 million, meaning that at all times they have to have $15 million. So in our humble opinion, we said, okay, we're giving them $33 million. We'll always have $15 million of cash we can foreclose on. So our risk capital is really $18 million. And we've got the technology approved, valued at $40 million plus, so we know we're covered, right? We know we're going to get our money back. And in the robotics business for medical devices, there's really three categories. There's your primary organ business. So, you know, if you want to go to your kidney and do surgeries, et cetera, that company has got a $5 billion market cap. Then there's spinal robotics, and the leading company there is $1 billion market cap, and our company is $250 million or $230 million market cap. So we felt that in the event that we have to foreclose on this asset, we can go to the intravascular or the organ businesses, and they would love to buy our property and own this business and then sell it through their distribution channel. So when we first looked at this, you know, now we picked on this for a very specific reason, because it's got a negative $24 million EBITDA. The use of proceeds for this company, they just did an $80 million, $90 million raise, was to do marketing, right? It's all about uptick. They've already got their product developed. Now it's about ramp up. This should be a $1 billion market company in 5 years. You know, we're... this is a very solid technology, and we're very comfortable with the credit, and we're getting 14% return on it. So we're getting paid for risk, and we found the opportunity through our sourcing channels, and something that we're proud to present to you as one of our loans in your book. So do you have any questions on this particular credit? Okay.
But what you just said is that if you needed to foreclose, you would own this technology.
Yes, sir. We're first lien. We are the undisputed champion of all our credits. And
you can start burning through your money in 24 minutes.
Right. You know, the good news about our underwriting process is we actually think about what do we do in that scenario up front. We know what bankers to call. We know the board members of the competing businesses. And so we would make three phone calls. We could probably get a private deal done very quickly. But we don't want to do a private deal. At that point, we own it. We want to maximize the return. So we want to get $250 million worth of our value. So sometimes we'll have to be there. Yeah. That's the risk you run with these types of loans. You have to feel comfortable owning it in a worst-case scenario. Any other questions on Hanson Medical before we move on? Okay. We presented to you on page 12 our committed capital from you all, which we're very thankful for. It's $40 million. We've called at $20,680,000 as of 12/31. However, as of today, we have, let's see here, we've actually called more capital. That so we have you have distributions of 10. So the remaining capital is $30 million. So we actually have called more capital. So the dollar invested today is at $19,246,000. So that's fresh information, but that's as of Q1 of this year. So we've actually taken $10 million more out of the $29 million. So just to give you guys an update on where we stand. Our pipeline is very, very strong right now, and we'll go into our pipeline in just a second. We've got about 55 opportunities generating about a gross IRR, about 13.9 to 14% gross. So great, great, great time, you know, regarding our pipeline. We can speak to that briefly. Do you have any questions on where we are with your invested portion of your capital? So we're about 48% invested as of today. As of 2 months from now, we should be about 65% invested, given our pipeline. we were asked to talk about a couple of deals that we either are calling capital or they're going into your book very shortly. So one of these deals is we call it UGGS. This is it's a medical services company. They own hospitals. It's diversified. It's got specialty acute care programs. This is also a publicly traded company. Its market cap is also in the 200, and stock prices changed so much, especially the last week. It's hard to keep track, but it's above a $200 million enterprise value business. We lent them initially $5 million because they had a special situation. They needed cash immediately. Then we're giving them incremental $29.7 million. It's a 2.5-year loan, and our trajectory on the IRR is approximately 12.5%, 13% on a gross basis. So, if you think about, what was the thesis about investing in these companies? It's diversification. They own basically 5 to 6 different businesses. They own hospitals, acute care, billing services. So it's a diversified, medical services company. And we've done a lot of diligence in this company. It was a very complicated capital structure. We got comfortable with the underwriting. We utilized 4 third-party diligence firms on the various business aspects of the company, and got comfortable with the credit, and we've already called capital for the initial slug, and that's the first $5 million that's already been called, and more capital is being called shortly. The next deal, we came with a medical theme with you guys today, is called Surgeon. This is a little bit different. This is a brand new hospital that's going in Houston area. It's a fairly large hospital, but this is unique in the sense that our loan to them is not to the hospital, but to the equipments that are being used in the hospital. So if you think about lenders in the hospital space, you have 3 things you can foreclose on. You got the mortgage, the lender that actually builds the bricks and mortar of a hospital. Then you have the medical equipment, CAT scan machines to hospital beds, you name suture trays, you name it. Then you've got accounts receivables from Medicare and Medicaid for the billing, right? So the actual revenue that's produced in the hospital. We've actually lent money to the AR receivables coming from Medicare and Medicaid in the past. So there's precedence for White Oak to be in that part of the business. But this loan is purely, it's called an equipment financing loan, okay? If God forbid, we have to foreclose on this hospital, and we take the hospital beds, which, by the way, are $60,000. I never thought a hospital bed cost that much, but especially the ones that are in the surgical rooms. If, God forbid, we have to foreclose on this property and take their hospital beds, CAT scan machines, x-ray machines, everything you can think of, $47.7 million worth of equipment, can this hospital operate and pay its AR lender? No, there's no AR because no one's getting services. Do you think the mortgage lender will be happy because their rents will be paid on time? No. There's no capital to pay the mortgage. So we really have, you can think of it as top of the capital structure of a senior secured program for the equipments of the hospital. And we're getting paid approximately 12.5% interest with the upfront points in this deal. Do you have any questions on our hospital deal for equipment financing?
Those hospital beds with or without patients?
Thankfully, without. But it's interesting when you think about collateral and how you underwrite. I'll give you guys a 2-minute interesting example. We lent money to a casino, and I'll be specific, it's Hard Rock Hotel in Vegas, where we realized, again, this thing was leveraged up quite a bit. However, there was a special situation where they needed $12 million. And we looked at this deal. We realized the only collateral that's left was the HVAC units, which is the air conditioning for the rooms. In order to operate a casino license in Vegas, you need to have a couple things. You need to have doors, and you need to have air conditioning. So our collateral package ended up being the doors and the air conditioning, because if we pull those out, they can't operate the casinos, which is really where the big bucks are. So anyway, that's a side note.
Real quick on these public reporting companies.
Yes, sir.
Have you ever done convertible debt? Is that in your document?
Our mandate is not to do convertible debt. Our mandate for you all and what White Oak is known for is to be senior secured lenders. So the answer to your question is no, sir. We have not done convertible debt, and we can't do convertible debt for you. What we can do is, as a senior secured lender, we can swap some of the PIK interest for convertible notes or warrants, we can do that. But that's not what we're underwriting to. We're going in as a senior lender. If you go to page 15, it gives you kind of the breakdown of our current pipeline. This is two weeks stale. This is April 1st. But you got about $1.2 billion of deal opportunities, $26.8 million average loan size, with a current projected gross IRR of 14.1%. That includes the upfront points, cash interest, and PIK interest. Firm update. I should apologize. There's a small typo on page 17 in the heading called direct lending, which is the fourth bullet point. And under that it says 68 loans originated and executed, totaling 1.1 $1.3 million invested assets from inception. That should be a billion instead of a million. So our apologies, just a small correction. We caught that before it was sent out. But our firm has grown since we all met about this time last year. We are investing heavily in our infrastructure and our people. We have approximately 47 professionals in the firm. I think when we were here last time, it was closer to 35 professionals. So we're continuing to build up the firm and investing a lot in our people and infrastructure and team, et cetera. So, and you guys have been very supportive of our program, so we want to thank you for that. Our offices' locations have not changed. We continue to have offices primarily in San Francisco, even though we did move offices to three Embarcadero, so it's close to the Ferry Building. We signed a five-year lease there, and it was a much more convenient place for our professionals because a lot of people commute from the East Bay and Marin. In our New York office, and we also have an office in Dallas. Do you have any questions on the firm overall we can address for you?
One question on the portfolio.
Yes, sir.
Are the 19 loans all current at this point?
All loans are current with the exception of a beef processing plant, which was an infrastructure project, which we knew going into the deal that it was it's not going to be current. But there's $150 million. Let me give you guys, I don't like answering questions without providing context. This plant is state-of-the-art, brand new plant to process up to 1,500 cows a day in North Dakota. I don't want to get graphic on you. You guys all probably have lunch already. But the cow goes in, nothing comes out. And
hamburgers.
Yes, hamburgers. This plant is really designed for Black Angus premium meat.
Between your heart story and this, I don't know if we're going to re-up with you or not.
Hey, we like
the bloody details.
we're hands-on, guys. to make a long story short, $150 million went to this plan. Our loan was about $33 million, and we felt that there's more upside potential for us to get more proactive in this credit. We already have a bid on the table for about $60 million on this credit, so we're going to make some money in this deal. Okay, we're about to hire an investment bank to go through a process. We think we can get a bigger bank for our buck. We'll do one of two things: either we're going to run it ourselves, or we're going to find a strategic partner and de-risk ourselves and have more upside, or sell it for a nice price tag. And, okay. And we'll have a result of that hopefully between now and the year end. So that's about it.
Okay.
Okay.
Foreclose on that. You're wiping all the rest of the debt off the books.
We wipe everyone off. And
you
that's
don't
the opportunity.
To deal with anybody on the.
No, we are the sole owner of the asset. Now we are giving some equity to the management team, but you know the beauty of what we did was to clean up the capital structure. A lot of that $150 million that was raised was fragmented. There was like a bunch of $500K million investors. That was part of the problem. They couldn't make a decision for their life. So we decided to get more proactive, and we felt comfortable with the collateral we had, that there was more value to be built for us. And you know, we got to be opportunistic. You know, we'd rather make you guys money than show up and say, hey, we worked with a C-tier capital structure or B-tier management team and got you at 12%. You know, we've got enough loans that will do that for you all. If we can have some good juicers, you know, we have an alignment of interest together to allowing us to do that for you in a thoughtful way.
Yeah, painful.
Only for the cow.
Yeah. All right. Any other questions regarding the portfolio? Because I want to make sure we have enough time to answer the letter that was sent to us on Friday and go through that and also answer any other broader questions that you may all have. Let's go into. Has everybody here had a chance to review the letter that was sent to us regarding selling source? Okay. So we actually spent the last couple days working with the company and our investment committee and the underwriting team that was behind Selling Source to make sure that we give you guys both thorough answers and also complete answers. To give you guys some background and context, marketing services and lead generation has been going on for a long time. It's not unique to Selling Source. The biggest lead generation firm in the country, in the world right now, is Google. So what does Google do? You type in cars. If Ford pays more dollars for the lead, where their name comes up in the search first, they get more bank. And if Ferrari wants to pay more, they'll be ahead of Ford. So it's really based on, so that's, you know, that's good advice for anyone that really wants to look at something. Go and look at page 2 and 3 and 5 of Google. Just don't get stuck on page 1. and everybody does searches. So that's an example of lead generation services company. Certainly, Google would not take our loan for 14% interest. So we focused on Selling Source. They are a market leader in what they do. They've built a lot of, spent a lot of time and money behind the technology. They are backed by a private equity group called London Bay Capital, which is backed by some very significant families that their net worth is over $20 billion. I can't tell you who that is. But so it's got very strong backing. And this company provides lead generation for consumer goods, for financial services. Their primary profits are coming from financial services today, which includes payday lending. There was a lot of questions that, is our borrower in the payday lending space? No, they're not. You know, they don't lend money to companies. And that's one of your primary questions. And I'm going to go over your questions and give you a very thorough response. And we also plan to give you guys a written response. And so just to make sure that we take your questions very seriously and it's got to be addressed, with a lot of thought. So, one of the first questions is, Selling Source appears to be an intermediary who assists other companies in making loans, including so-called payday loans. Certain states have strict laws regarding the issues of payday loans. There is concern that some of the loans, particularly loans made online, may not be legal. So Selling Source specializes in consumer-led generation, both financial services and consumer goods. So consumer goods is a big part of their business, and they actually spun off one of their consumer subsidiaries to a publicly traded company, which White Oak's interest in the company's ownership has about $25 million of value. So there, that's part of our lien on this company. So just an FYI. Partner Weekly is the Selling Sources Financial Services business. So that's, it's called Partners Weekly. They advertise in numerous ways, including on TVs and Money Mutual media spots, which are both online mediums and also television mediums, where you'll get an ad saying, hey, you want a loan, that you call a number or you go to this website, Money Mutual, you fill out an application, and that's all Selling Source does. They don't make the loan themselves, but they sell this person or this lead to other companies. And that's their primary business. And for that lead, they can get $80 million, I'm sorry, $80, $100. So that's how they generate their profits. So consumer information is gathered in a very secure manner. It's called a lead management system that eliminates fraud and duplicates leads. The consumer application information is then presented to lenders based on their business practices. For example, some of these lenders are state license and only will deal with customers in certain states, and that's it. So if, for example, you've got an online lender that has a California state license, you know, they can only take California, not Pennsylvania. Others are the sovereign model, which are the Indian tribal model, which they go to, I'm not very familiar with the Indian tribe names, but you go to one in Utah, and they have jurisdiction, they have sovereignty on that jurisdiction. They set up their company there, and they send their lending practices there. And a lot of the payday lenders are based on the Indian tribal model. The issue of whether the sovereign business model for a lender is legal or not legal is currently, it's a highly contested kind of discussion at this point. There's nothing that says it's illegal. So it's a gray area, or, you know, everybody says it's legal. We have the company hired Morrison Forster as their outside legal rep and says, hey, this is a legal business right now. There's nothing illegal about it. So that, you know, one of your questions is, it legal or not? Currently, it is legal, but it's the legislature around this business is being rewritten as we speak. The company's in-house and outside counsel, Morrison Forster, assure that the company's providing leads to lenders who are legal and who are authorized to make loans. So that's something, because this is a high-touch, very visible area, you know, the company is very astute, they're aware of the issues, and they've got good representation, so they're doing everything within the boundaries of the laws today. One of your questions was, according to the January 8th, 2012 Bloomberg article, about payday lending, data from payday loan applications sold in online auctions, Selling Source or its affiliates, auction leads for loans. Yes, that's their business. According to Richard Cortrary, the director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the highest bidder may be a legitimate lender, but it also could be a fraudster that has enough of the consumer's sensitive financial information to make unauthorized withdrawals from their bank account. So there is no action of data, just for the record. In order to maximize revenues per lead, the company presents consumer application information to the lender who is paying the highest price. That is correct. If the lender passes on the lead, the company presents it to the lender who has the next highest bid. All lenders are qualified lenders. And again, that goes back to their legal diligence process with outside counsel, their in-house counsel. Lenders are not allowed to retain consumer data they do not purchase. And each lender is individually vetted by the company's team of compliance and with the company's lender agreement and OLA, which is the Online Lenders Alliance Best Practices. The company has also partnered with the FTC and the Secret Service in this area, helping prevent fraud. So they've actually worked with the FBI to unravel three cases which the underlying groups had fraudulent intent, and they brought that to justice, and the FBI found them. So the FBI is working with our borrower to make sure they find bad guys in the space. And candidly, you're going to get bad guys in the internet space no matter what. It's not exclusive to our borrower. There's a lot of internet fraud out there. Fraud is a major problem area in the in the areas of internet marketing. The company will continue to be the leader in this area to ensure they mitigate the fraud. So the next question you have is questions regarding selling SOAR's activities are not new. In 2011, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania was concerned selling source violated the Consumer Discount Company Act. There was concern with the section that leads with loans of $25,000 or less with problems such as interest that exceeded that by the permitted law. So the Pennsylvania Banking Commission objected to the company's Money Mutual national advertising campaign. And they were viewing that negatively. They said that commercials being viewed in Pennsylvania were where they do not have state licensed lenders, and therefore the consumers should not be viewing these commercials. It's a very extreme kind of position that the Pennsylvania Banking Commission took on this case. Our borrower agreed to pay a $40,000 fee and not to market, actually prevent Pennsylvania residents to complete an application form. So that was the result of that situation. I wanted to kind of just broadly talk to you guys about payday lending. Whether we like it or not, it's an important part of our economy. I mean, I drove through the fields, and I know, you know, the people that work in the fields. Majority of the business comes during Christmas time, right? People want to buy presents, and their paycheck dollar amount doesn't allow them to purchase presents. So they go to a payday lending group, whether it's online, whether it's state by state, whether it's an Indian tribal group out of Utah, and they get an advance of $400, $600 based on the paycheck they get. So if the borrower, the individual, doesn't have a paycheck or a company he or she is employed by, they won't qualify for the payday loan. So it goes to the payroll system. That's how they do a lot of their checks and balances to make sure that they get repaid. So think about this field worker that they're trying to buy presents for holiday period. And I kid you not, about 60% of all payday lending is based on this example I'm giving you. So what do? You know, they don't have the money. So they want to get an advance on their next paycheck, right? Whatever the advance rate is, again, it could be $400, it could be $1,000, it could be whatever dollar amount it is. And we're not involved, our borrower is not involved, obviously, with a contractual agreement because we're not the ones lending the money. So they go to a payday, they don't go to their bank. Their bank is not going to give them an advance. They probably don't have a credit card. These are people that don't have good credit ratings. They probably don't even have a car. So they go to a payday lending group, and they get charged an upfront point, okay, or two or three. This is where they make their money, and I want to tell you how our banking system works. And once they get the money, they pay the upfront points, they get charged an interest rate, and until the next paycheck hits, and then it goes pay down this payday loan. Well, the reason why the interest rate becomes higher, I like to give the ATM example. What's the lowest amount you can go get money from an ATM? It's $20, right? So the bank is charging you $2.50, right, for $20. Is that usury? you can argue it's not the interest rate. They're not even charging you an interest rate. It's that the upfront points is what jacks up the IRR. So we're aware of the sensitivity with payday lending. I got a couple of, just very keynote statements. One is payday lending is not going to go away. It's an important part of our economy. It's a part of the economy that the middle class and above doesn't want to know it exists. And people in their fancy homes in San Francisco don't know it exists, okay? But it's the reality of our economy. It's not going to go away. However, the business needs more regulation. And our system is... It's not being monitored. This is not, it's a state-by-state program which will ultimately regulate this business. And we are proponents of that. I say we are borrowers proponents of that. When this model goes away from online offshore lending, which is kind of the bad people that do this business, to state-by-state, transition more to state-by-state, and more to tribal, it's going to legitimize this business even further. So I want to kind of get this off my chest to let you know that this is not a bad business. The fees probably have to go lower, and it's got to get more regulation. And we are moving towards that direction. It'll take about a year or 2 years to get there. And by that time, our loan is probably paid off. So, you know, I hope we were comprehensive in addressing your concern. I know there was a lot, you know, when you're in a forum like this and I'm yapping, it's very hard to digest it. But we will give a written response with the same information. But we want to make sure that you're comfortable that, you know, you're dealing with an institution that gets the risks involved. But again, we're a lead generation service provider to the payday lending space, which is only a component of financial services. It's just only a component of their overall business, which is really consumers. Any questions? We're ready for this topic, so you let us know if you have any other questions regarding this particular credit.
First of all, on the what you described, I believe, is Indian tribal method or
right
policy. I appreciate it if you guys could take a look at the recent rulings. Basically, what's coming down is that the Indians have authority within their Indian tribe area. When they make loans outside to different states, Pennsylvania, California, whatever, that state law applies. And
yeah,
there have been some recent rulings on that.
The old
theory that it's coming from an Indian, therefore it's exempt from the state laws, has been determined not true.
That's correct. So the Indian tribal model is more of an online mm-hmm. model. And there is this big question right now is, if your company is based in, the biggest example is actually eBay. eBay had to now charge, people loved eBay because you didn't pay state taxes, right? You bought all your goods, people loved it, right? That's how they built their business. Then someone in the IRS said, this is not working. Just because you're eBay, you don't have any stores in California, doesn't mean that you can't get taxed because of the volume. So it's the same dilemma that the tribal groups are facing. If they are brick and mortar and they've got state registration, then that's not a problem, right? But so they can sell to their own state if they've got the banking license. What it gets tricky is the online model for the Indian tribal groups. And that's still an area that's a question mark. There are specific rulings coming out. But these groups that are very big in the Indian tribal model are, one, contesting it. Two, they're building relationships with the banking system so they can go state by state. So they are also transferring their model from online into state by state.
I do want to thank you for your comments, opinions such as it's not a bad business, obviously, opinions. The question that you're not directly making the loan still leaves the question of whether or not Stan Sara is involved in an activity that ultimately results in a loan which is or is not legal or acceptable to the board. So those issues, I think, are still pending.
Well, we're happy to address any questions regarding that. Again, you know, our job is to find opportunities that are senior secured loans that we're getting paid for risk, and we do a good job of underwriting to not make you
lose.
Can
you address your understanding of the last part of the fiduciary responsibility?
As a manager investing in a loan like Selling Source in that context?
Your responsibilities, White Oak, relation to our board, our fiduciary responsibilities.
So we are fiduciaries for all of our investors, including all of yourselves and the board. That's our job. You know, that's what keeps us awake at night. So every day we wake up trying to find opportunities that are within our mandate that we have. You know, we sold you guys a bag of goods, and we'd like to deliver that bag of goods. So in terms of, you know, there are going to be credits that people will have personal opinions on.
Absolutely.
And whether it's payday lending today or, you know, if we have an investor in, call it the country of India, they may not like for us to own a slaughterhouse. You know, we can't serve everyone's needs. At the end of the day, we have, you know, a broad mandate to originate senior secured loans that are, for us, giving you guys the return bogeys that we're targeting. We as managers and as fiduciaries for you all can go and sleep at night knowing that we are lending money to a company that is in the lead generation business. It's no different than Google or thousands of other marketing services companies that provide leads.
So your comfort derives from the fact that the company you're dealing with does not make the ultimate loan?
That's one that, well, first of all, White Oak does not have a problem with payday lending. No, we as a group we've not invested in a pay lending group directly that makes loans. That's not what we've done. We've seen a lot. There's a lot of groups out there that do, groups that you are either invested with or you probably know that are very reputable firms. There's a lot of money in the payday lending space. We've decided not to go into the paid lending space for various reasons, whether it's not the right opportunity or not the right credit. But we don't find paid lending to be a bad business. We think it's an important part of our economy. And 1 second, Paul. And, you know, for the record, if you guys own Wells Fargo stock, Bank of America stock, JP Morgan stock, the biggest backers of paid lending are these banks. So, it's not capital coming in from a group like White Oak that provides the actual currency or the money for the loan. It's the largest banks in the world. The biggest bank that supports payday lending today is Wells Fargo Bank. They have about 40% market share in payday lending.
Okay. Which happens to be one of the biggest holdings of Dodge & Cox, one of our...
Okay.
It's also, I think, this is always a touchy subject because... As individuals, we all have beliefs. I hate cigarette smoking.
Me too.
But there's companies that are in the S&P 500 that support or profit from that type of activity. And it becomes an issue from a pension plan board level as a whole on social responsible investing as a group, not on what us as individuals happen to believe or not believe. So if this is the direction the board wants to go into, then I think we need to move in that direction as a group and not get into the habit of looking at every individual holding of each of our managers at this point in time and object based on as an individual whether we don't like that type of activity. That's my own opinion.
We are getting into opinions, and I appreciate that. I appreciate.
Well, you are
answers.
Too, Gordon.
I understand.
I think if we dug deep enough of it, any investment that we have, we will find something objectionable to one of us.
Are we close to being finished here?
I am.
Okay, good.
So I think we need to, our mandate is to you is to make us money.
Within the guidelines.
The guidelines. And listen, I appreciate the concern. We don't want to take your concerns lightly. We take it to heart. If we're ever fortunate to win your business again after we do a good job of investing your capital, and if we are in front of you soliciting you again and say, hey, White Oak, no direct lending, we can include that in your mandate. You know, we're not adverse to customizing certain things for different people, but as I said, we can go home sleep at night knowing what we're doing, how we're doing, in particular with Selling Source. And again, we apologize if we offended anyone personally, but we feel like it's a good investment for everyone here.
Any other questions? Thank you for your time.
That was a hot seat. I hope next year will be easier. Okay. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
That was great.
If we sell our cow business, we'll shovel some steak.
I'd like me a good hamburger or something.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Born fast.
Thank you. Paul, you're up.
Thank you, Gordon. We're going to start off with a memo from an on-site at PIMCO. As we've been discussing the drama at PIMCO since the end of last year when Muhammad stepped down as co-CIO. And I went down to Newport Beach April 8th, and you can see our memo. And this particularly affects Stan Serra and our portfolio with PIMCO because the lead portfolio manager stepped down also. And that's Mark Seidner. Interesting, Mark was recruited to PIMCO by Muhammad. They both worked at Harvard together. And when Muhammad left, coincidentally, Mark left also. So I don't think that is a coincidence. There's three good items, I think, that came out of this. There's been a lot of negative press and some bad items, too. Mainly bad blood between Bill and Muhammad that started as what was described as an amicable divorce, but as one who's gone through a divorce, amicable divorces are often turned into not so amicable, and I think that's what happened here. The good news is the structure that's been put in place, having six deputy CIOs below Bill, has a deeper team at the top than two individuals running the firm and two individuals that had large egos, big personalities, and seemingly often clashed with each other, as was reported in the press. So that's good. There's a I met with the president there. I expressed my interest in reading all the stories in the soap opera fashion, but told him after a while it was getting tiring, and I suggested that maybe Bill should write a letter of apology for all that back and forth, name calling, etc. The president admitted at one point he did have to whisper in Bill's ear and said, enough is enough, stop talking to the press, and that seemingly has at least slowed down. New portfolio manager for Stan Serra is Tony Crescenzi. I met with him. He's very capable, good person, and he sits on the investment committee, which is a very elevated position at PIMCO. So we are getting a senior person to replace Mark, who left. And I think we're in capable hands for our portfolio there. Lastly, what's always impressive in going down there, our due diligence committee went there last year, is that the waves of people they bring in front of you are always, at least in my opinion, very impressive individuals. They're obviously paid very well, but they're also, it's a deep resource company, as one would expect being the largest fixed income shop in the world, but the level of talent and the amount of talent there, it is very impressive. And every time I go down there, I meet more and new people, including Tony, our new PM, and they're very impressive. The major concern I have is the, these people are paid very well, and after a few years, my concern would be they get tired of maybe dealing with Bill or whatever and leave. We've seen a few departures, but it is understood when they start there that it's a hard-working culture and Bill is very demanding, so it's not an unknown when they go there. And as I said, it is a very deep type of staff there. So our recommendation is the portfolio. I know there's been some talk about returns. Since inception, they are ahead of the benchmark on a net basis. But they, as I've said in the past, it's about one-fifth of our total fixed income portfolio. Dodge & Cox is the other four-fifths. But this one-fifth does serve as a really nice complement to Dodge & Cox, who tend to be underweight treasuries, overweight corporates at all time, where PIMCO will be more moving in and out of sectors, but they tend to have a lot higher treasury allocation to kind of dampen that big underweight at Dodge & Cox. So for now, my opinion is to continue to hold them Obviously, we'll, as we always do on a monthly basis, when reporting performance, continue to monitor them. But I went there kind of expecting the worst, but I came out feeling pretty darn good.
Paul, with Seidner out and presenting, is there any chance that the strategy would change?
No. I mean, they're very, yeah, no, not at all. Not at all. In other words, subtle differences between PMs running it, but they all work off the firm's views and themes. And our mandate is being a kind of a core mandate with a low tracking error to a benchmark. There's not much room except for subtle differences.
So those barriers or those boundaries
won't Yes. Okay. Exactly. If it was a unconstrained portfolio where the PM could go anywhere, do anything, that would have a much more impact in changing PMs. The other issue, which Gordon, you brought up, was the guidelines. We reported back to you on a proposed change that PIMCO wanted to make on the guidelines. We're still in the process of talking to them, and we'll get back to you in the next month. But as always, as we're talking, they adhere to the guidelines as they exist. But I just wanted to circle back on that.
Thank you.
Sure. Any questions on PIMCO? Okay, we'll go on to performance, which March was a month of, it's probably the most nondescript month I've had to report in a long while. Markets didn't change much. As you can see on the return page, value did beat growth in the U.S. markets. And lo and behold, we've seen emerging markets start to rally the last couple months, up another 3% in March after a good February. And on fixed income, yields went up a bit. You can see the one-year number for the Barclays aggregate minus 0.1%, although year-to-date we're up 1.8% as yields have fallen from the end of the December 31st last year. And emerging market bonds and high yields continue to perform well as these spread products and lower grade spread products are performing quite well. 10 years, Russell 3000 up 7.8, Aquiex US up 7.6, emerging markets up 10.5. So we've weathered the crisis and the large snapback since March of 2009, now 5 years old. It's been quite an impressive snapback. Page one, we're at $1.73 billion. As we said the past couple months, U.S. equities will be the source to fund future capital calls and direct lending, real estate and infrastructure once we get there. You can see direct lending is now a little bit above half of our target policy, and fixed income and international equities right at our target policies. Page two, the fund was relatively flat for the month, down $4 million, so basically unchanged when you factor in the monthly retiree payment, up $182 million from the prior year, which is obviously a very nice number to see. Page three, our percents of the asset classes at the current targets are right on. And page four, cash, $10.9 million domestic equities, $3.5 in international, is fairly low. And fixed income, also fairly low, although cash is used for duration control there. Page five, our performance numbers. As I said, it was a flat March.
Delaware had kind of a bad alpha.
Yeah, Delaware had a rough, but remember, they're a very concentrated portfolio, and we'll see that some time to time, month to month. The month before is quite strong, and they're up 2%. We're now 9 months complete of the fiscal year, June 30th. Alphas continue to be positive on all active managers in U.S. equity. Dodge & Cox Fixed Income doing quite well. and direct lending, you see the numbers all zero for March. We got statements after I produced this, so we will update that. I noticed Raven had a very nice write-up in March, actually. So we'll reflect that on report next month and hopefully have April ahead of time. So for the month, we were down 7 basis points against policy, up 21 basis points. 9 months, up 14% versus 12.4. The hope is that we can hold this going in the last quarter. We've seen other quarters, the last quarter be hurtful after having a good 9 months. Remember last May, June wasn't a pretty scenario.
Hey, we can get to 11 months and still time.
Yeah, April started off being a little challenging, but we've rallied in equities this week, so it's kind of a, feels like a flattish, slightly down month in April. You know, the hope is we can hold these type of gains to book for our actuary rate for this year. On the rolling 3 years, pages 6 through 13, nothing really to report there. All in all, like I said, a nondescript, kind of flattish month, good 9 months, and active managers, particularly U.S. equities, LSV, and Dodge & Cox fixed income are doing quite well. Once again, this fiscal year, they all did well last fiscal year also. Top 10 holdings. You can see BlackRock large cap growth. You can see the Russell 1000 growth was down 2.2% as of April 15th. 1 week later, that's probably gotten close to zero, I would suspect. I want to report a couple things. One is, when you look on page 2, the value, J.P. Morgan, Pfizer has been weak there. Page 3, Cap Prospects has had a lot of good performance by some of their holdings. Belden, Regal, Belay, and Littelfuse, numbers 2, 3, and 4 all up sharply, and 9 and 10 up. Page 4, Delaware, you can see those huge down relative changes. Those are due to stock splits. EOG and Google split. We have done this automated. Nate has automated this.
Yes.
And automated does not take up stock splits. So we will
manually correct it on the first page, but this one escaped me. But
yes.
The Google split was a real reporting nightmare for a lot of different clients. But yeah, they did not lose 50% of their value in 14 days of the month.
No.
I can confidently report that today.
So at least it makes you look at it.
Yes, it does. Exactly. I'm not sure see who's watching, who's looking at this.
So I think what we've seen is a rotation in the market, though. We've seen a lot of the high flyers, what we talked about at last quarterly performance, the investors looking for top-line revenue growth wherever they can find it. And social media was certainly one area, the Twitters, Teslas even of the world. Those got corrected pretty hard the last couple months. I mean, 20% or more corrections underneath the averages staying fairly close to highs. And we see the rotation into utilities, energy, and the old defensive names like Kellogg's of the world. These are generally signs that we're in the late cycle stage. The late cycle stage is when the defensive utilities and the energy start to outperform the technology, industrials, the early cyclicals, materials. So that'll be something to watch. Now, we've seen a snapback this week of some of the social media. Biotechs have gotten hit hard, too, after outperforming for 2-plus years very well. So that'll be something to keep an eye on. But it appears like the market has shifted to these late cyclical type
names. Is the defensive partly because of the Russia thing?
It might be, but the market, can you tell me some troops were doing some, U.S. is doing some naval exercises in that area, and we hear about troops at the border, and the markets don't go down, though. I mean, they go down temporarily, but...
I mean, they're Russian. We Paul and I met with some managers right after Russian troops entered Crimea, and the market, some of their bellwether stocks, you know, they dropped instantly, you know, over a few days, about 10 to 15%. And the few days following that, the market came in and scooped up on that yield and closed the gap, and it's down slightly flat, but nothing that says, hey, this major nation just invaded a country.
But the rotation into defensive might be partly.
Yeah, it might be. That might be
a little piece of
part of it, yeah. But as I said, we've had the market, you know, the stocks have rallied for 5 years now. So it's been an elongated rally and a big rally, but from a very low levels. But intuitively, it makes sense to be in a late cycle.
Okay, any questions of Paul, or we'll move on to the next subject. Committee reports.
So as I said earlier, 8A is being put off until next May, and
AB,
Maria has a report out.
All right.
Yes, the due diligence committee approved the due diligence calendar for the next 4 years, basically.
Wow.
We have that money, and that needs to be approved by the school board.
Okay. Everybody have a calendar?
Easy year.
What's that?
It's an easy year. It's all San Francisco.
We don't realize that.
Since you were up it, though. We didn't want to be back in San Francisco with Darren.
The last time I was on that committee, I wound up in Rhode Island. And
yeah, wait a minute. He got by too easy.
That's next year.
2016.
We'll put you back on the committee.
Just, there you go.
Just in time.
I wasn't sure of Rhode Island. That
hurt.
Like that.
That hurt.
It could be worse, Darren.
Could have been. Could have been.
Well, unless somebody thinks we need to change it for Jim's benefit, I guess I need a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve the due diligence calendar.
Second.
Okay, moved and second. Any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Hey, we're getting unanimous. Good.
We don't have any social issues.
Okay. See, I can get another unanimous. We have to move into closed session.
Move into closed session.
Thank you.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify saying
aye.
Aye.
No drinking.
Gosh, we're getting rough. We're back into open session.
Do we have a quorum?
Yes.
Yes.
If you start with a quorum,
there's not too many.
Really? Even if you end up without a quorum?
Yes.
Really? I didn't know that.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Because otherwise, if a group of people didn't like what the board was doing, they could leave and they could shut down the meeting.
Yeah.
Yes. So if everybody leaves, I can do anything wrong.
Isn't it? They did that. They tried to do that.
Well, don't tell me. I haven't caught up with those episodes.
Alrighty. So now we're into, what is it?
Members.
I don't know. Go ahead.
I have nothing except that I won't be here next month.
Nothing to report.
Nothing. I'm just concerned that I wasn't at the last meeting, and it only went 15 minutes.
I tried to make it longer.
No, it was just one.
Other than that,
do you want us to tell you the real reason why?
Donna. Darren?
Nothing.
Staff? Okay, I have nothing, so we'll adjourn the meeting.
Thank you.